All right, welcome everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is, it's People's Internet Radio. I normally run the Cancel the Cabal show on Tuesday evenings from 9 till 11, but Vin, his Sunday slot is currently open. He had a little bit of a mishap, and he's had a concussion for most of today, and he's not able to do his show, but I got in contact with both of the people that were supposed to be on with Vin tonight. I actually have Billy McGuire and Chris Fogarty on. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You're
and
very
thank
welcome.
Thank you, Stephen. And I would like to say hello to the audience there, you know. And are we on from, is that going on to America as well? You're doing this from America.
Well, I am. There are listeners here in America. I'm not sure how many, but there.
Yes, we might as well make it clear. Billy McGuire is talking from County Limerick in Ireland. He's the head of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. And I, Chris Fogarty, am talking from my unit looking out over Lake Michigan, a Lakeshore Drive in Chicago. So there we have quite an international effort this
isn't
afternoon.
Isn't that technology, Chris? Isn't that technology at its best?
Yes, it is.
Unbelievable to think that here are three of us. You're
yes.
All over the world, and we're all speaking.
Billy, instead, why not rip into your very important message about Ireland's sovereignty?
Yes, but what I wanted, originally I was on, as you know, Vincent is very good, and you know, I wish Vincent very well and a speedy recovery. You know, I only spoke to him about an hour ago, and he told me that he had a very bad concussion, and he has, I think, something very serious along with his leg as well. So we do wish him the best. You know, he's been so good to the Irish Republican Brotherhood and everybody who he really understands sovereignty. From the very first day I ever met Vincent, he could understand it. And he's been great to us. He's the only one, you could say, because the papers and television and all these other programs, they just don't want to know about sovereignty until now. But what I was on about...
I must also wish him a very, very speedy recovery. But go ahead, Billy.
Sunday the 25th of September, which is only a couple of weeks away, 2016, from 2 to 6 in Hayes' Hotel in Thurles. And that's our annual general meeting. And it's a very County Tipperary. And as you know, that's where the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood founded the GAA. It's our organization. And the Sam McGuire and the Liam McCarthy trophies and the All-Ireland medal, they're all ours. And as you know, the GAA on the 4th of September 2008 took off our sovereign seal and era. It's no longer an All-Ireland competition. It is a GAA competition now. Because
yes, what has happened is very, very sad. What has happened is that British influence have taken over many Irish nationalist and patriotic organizations. It is truly shocking. Many of the members don't even know it. Most of the athletes, and almost every athlete in Ireland is a member of the Gaelic Athletic Association, the GAA that Billy is talking about. And they do not know, or they're learning it now, that they have been taken over, corporatized, and taken over by their very enemies at the top of the organization.
That's absolutely correct, and you put it very well, Chris. On the 4th of September 2008, they changed the GAA into a corporate body for commercial reasons. All licenses are only legal, valid, and bona fides from the 21st of January to the 20th of January each and every year, and they return then to the sovereign citizens and to the sovereign government of Dáil-Éireann by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election. And they didn't tell anybody that they were taking off that. And they took it off for commercial reasons. They were trying to sell the rights to sporting rights and that to various places around the world. And they didn't have a license. And they don't have a license to do that.
But the GAA belongs. It's a grassroots organization, and it's a non-profit. It works. It is the collective effort of all of the athletes of Ireland, and the notion that somehow a dozen people can get together and declare it their property is shocking.
Shocking, absolutely terrible. And not one was I got on to, and I got on to the various county boards. nobody even knew about it. And as you know, we made a special set of medals for the Sam McGuire and the Lee McCarthy trophies, our trophies. And everybody donated the gold and the silver for those. You know, ladies gave broken bits of jewelry and that. And we had a marvelous jeweler who melted all that down and made a beautiful two sets of medals for the Sam McGuire and the Lee McCarthy. And the GAA wouldn't allow that. They said any player that accepted those medals would never play for their county again. That's how bitter it is. We don't. We've never been invited to.
You're going to be winning that one, Billy, because the Irish people are not naturally traitors. They're not going to allow that kind of thing to continue, to allow a handful of people to take over all the benefits from their games. They're playing free of charge, and it is outrageous that there's millions of euro being made from it and is being essentially looted by these people who consider themselves the owners of it. They never bought it. They never bought it.
They didn't. It still belongs. As I say, and you know the medal that they, it's the GAA, and it's only a GAA final now. But I always said that, you know, whatever the players get, they would get an All-Ireland medal. And those people who got those and played so hard and, you know, and trained so hard and dedicated, that they could show that to their children and their grandchildren. And that's their proof. Since 1910, that they won that, and that for them to take it out off off the medal without even consulting us, and you know, to do what they did for money and for commercial reasons, nobody knows even where all that money is going to. That is belong to the players. You know, the GAA, our sovereignty is the people are sovereign, and you know, that's what it's all about. Under the Crown of England, we had nothing. And if you haven't got your sovereignty, you're a slave. And what they're doing is these corporations, they're enslaving our people again through taxes, and you have to pay for everything. And these people have no right at all to it. You know, it's the people are sovereign. And but anyway, that's what we're hoping to do on the 25th. And as I said, that's where we're telling people that it's our meeting is from 2 to 6, and we're hoping after that the Tipperary team will be there with the Lee McCarthy, our trophy, and that they will understand and they will accept those medals, and they will have those for their children and grandchildren. So if you haven't your sovereignty, aren't you only a slave? And it's time people stood up and refused to and asked the questions, you know, about where they're getting their sovereignty from and where is the GAA get their license to sell all the you know, the programs. They haven't got a license because, as I said, all licenses are belong to the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood. And they revert back from the 21st of January each and every year. A license is only legal, valid and bona fide. There isn't one corporation or one bank here that has a license to trade in the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. And they revert back on the 20th of January every year to the Sovereign Dáil-Éireann government and to the sovereign citizens. And if you don't comply with that license, you're out for the next year. And what a wonderful way those people who put the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood who put that together.
And Bill is referring to January 21st, because January 21st is Ireland's 4th of July. It is the birthday of the modern nation, until it was suppressed by King George V. And so in order for Ireland to gain its independence and to run its own nation of government of, by, and for the people, it must reestablish its true Irish Dáil-Éireann and get rid of the royal Dáil-Éireann.
That's it. Absolutely right, Chris. You put it so well. And, you know, you have the sovereign constitution by the will of all the people and all the citizens of the 32 counties in the 1918 32 county election. That's the mandate that we were given to form the Sovereign Republic of Ireland, the Sovereign Republican Dáil-Éireann, and the Sovereign Republican Dáil-Éireann courts, and the War of Independence as a defence force. And Sinn Féin was the political wing of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. But that Sinn Féin is nothing to do with the present. You know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and Provision Sinn Féin, they all came out of that. And they don't recognise, you know, the sovereign Dáil-Éireann government, and they don't recognise sovereignty. And, you know, Ogden the Hearn won the War of Independence, and that's where that comes out of. And if you look at Vaughan, we bought Vaughan's Hotel, my family, in 1917, and we would not have bought Vaughan's Hotel. You know those tunnels they've opened up from the rotunda up to Vaughan's Hotel and from Phil Shanahan's pub in Foley Street, which they were down today. You know, when Tipperary goes to Dublin on for the Sam Maguire and the Lee McCarthy, which they were in both of them this year in the semi-final and the final. They won the final today of the hurling. They always went down to the Sean Tracy's where he was shot, and they read the proclamation there, and you know, it's very nice for Tipperary.
Where was that? Where was that spot, Billy?
I think it's called Talbot Street. It's just down there. It's just go from O'Connor Street. It's only maybe 100 yards down from. I think it's Talbot Street is where it is. I've been there many times.
If it was Talbot Street, that's the same street that the British set off their bomb that murdered the 33 back in 30 some years ago.
Yeah, but that's where the Sean Tracy was shot.
But I see. Time, so both events.
And it's very important that you know that the Hurleys are known as the Tipperary Rifles because that's all they had to drill with. And you know they had no guns or anything in those days when they were trying to train. You see, the GA was the backbone. That's why it was so important setting up the GA. And that's why the staff of the Cork Examiner, you know, that's John Francis Maguire's paper. And the staff, you had the two of the staff there that were journalists was John McKay and John Wise Power, and you're there in the if they're in that's where it came from, and that's all the links, and that was to set up you know a GA club in every little town and parish in Ireland, and that's where the strength was. The people were sovereign, and that's where that came out of. And you can't nobody can destroy that. You only destroy that yourself. By corruption and you know, but they were wonderful people. But the Hurleys are particularly, they're known as the Tipperary Rifles, and that's how they got their name. Because in those days, you see, the RIC and those, they used to go hurling, but they were also drilling with the Hurleys and that, and the RIC couldn't do anything about it. But Vaughan's Hotel
It might interest maybe some listeners to know that the Irish in Argentina that was their main game, hurling. In fact, the Irish Hurling Club is set up in Hurlingham, outside Buenos Aires. But during World War II, they couldn't get any more hurleys from Ireland, and so they took up field hockey, and now they're always at the national championship level in field hockey. The same club.
But you know, ours are people. We're not allowed to know our history. And I think it's dreadful to see, and I think it's dreadful what the GA have done to Sam Maguire and the Lee McCarthy. And use our tricolour flag. That's our tricolour flag that we put up in 1916 on the GPO. And, you know, it was brought in here by Thomas Francis Marr and, you know, France, and with the orange nearest to the pole. And it was ratified under that 32.
Is it not the green nearest to the pole?
That's what was ratified with the green nearest to the pole on the 21st of January 1919. Yeah. But originally it had the orange nearest to the pole.
I see.
In deference to the Presbyterian people.
Yeah.
And you know, people don't know that. And that tricolour flag has never been captured. And it was taken down by Dermot Lynch and brought up under those tunnels. You know, they've never really told the history of 2016. In 1916, what happened? And you have to go back to what happened in 1912 when Sir Edward Carson founded the Ulster Volunteers, and in 1913 they became the UVF Army, and because Guinness's gave 100,000, Lord Rothschild gave 100,000, and Rupert Kipling gave 50,000 to buy those top class German guns. And in 1913, then, the intelligence officers of the Irish Republican Brotherhood reported to the executive of the Supreme Council what had happened. And they founded the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army as a defense force. And in the rotunda, where we talked about those tunnels, and in 1914, then, the UVF Army declared war on Britain and Ireland if Home Rule was imposed by the British government. And the British government capitulated to the UVF Army. And there was in that was the my grand uncle Tom and Sam Maguire, who was secretary of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. They joined the Circle and the Cell. And Sam had been, he did his exam for the British Civil Service, and they sent him to the post office in London to collect the intelligence on the ground.
Yeah, it's important to mention here that the UVF is the Ulster Volunteer Force, Orangemen from the six counties in the north, who are descendants of the English planters in Ireland.
That's exactly what they are. But the point is that you could see how, but my granduncle then was sent to Calcutta in India, and to collect the intelligence on the Crown forces. And they came every week through Tom Maguire's, to Sam Maguire's desk in London with all the others. And he took those every week up to Vaughan's Hotel. We only had a room, the Irish Republic had a room in Vaughan's Hotel for Mrs. Vaughan at that stage. And he used to, they were all taken up under the tunnels and that. Without those tunnels, we wouldn't have bought Vaughan's Hotel. Without those tunnels, we wouldn't have won the 1918-32 county election, and you wouldn't have won the War of Independence. That's how important they are. And I'm from 53 years trying to get to open up those tunnels, which, thank God, Bartle Darcy has done it. And it's so important. There's only 3 years. 2019 is the 100th anniversary of Dáil Éireann. And what is the provisional government going to say, and what are they going to do? You know, everyone is talking about sovereignty, sovereignty, sovereignty. And the important thing, the sovereignty of we can, the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood and the Sovereign Republic of Eras, they can trace that sovereignty for over 5,000 years. And you start, if they want to prove it, we'll prove it and we'll trace it for them. If you go to Loch Gur in County Limerick, those stone circles, and there's a very good book by, it's called Prehistoric Astronomy and Ritual by Aubrey Burrell, B-U-R-L, and it's a small synopsis book that he brought out. I've read some of his work. He's done all the alignments and all the mathematics and all the assignments to those circle and stone and earthen circles and what they're aligned to and all
the
mathematics.
By the way, if anyone questions whether the Irish government is acting on behalf of the Irish people, it's important to know that a group of international banksters were allowed into Ireland some 15 years ago, and when they made a lot of bad investments in mortgages of 78 billion euro entirely, the Irish, this is hard to believe, but the Irish government made them whole for all their bad investment decisions and foisted those banksters' losses off onto the taxpayers of Ireland. Nothing like it has ever been done in the world before. It only Ireland's worst enemies would consider doing such a thing. And somehow it has been done and it's being made stick. But here in the States, their treason is even more noticeable, because when the Birmingham Six and the Guildford Four were framed for murders they did not commit, and the whole world knew it, my wife and I went to the Irish Consul General here in Chicago on both those occasions when those people were first locked up in Manchester in one case, in Guildford in the other. They were locked up, a group of Irishmen and a few women. And the Irish Consul General would say, oh, terrorism, terrorism. This is hard to believe, but the Irish government and all of its factotums consider that the Irish patriots, so they talk as if the Irish patriots are the terrorists, despite the readily available homicide records, which show that British forces in Ireland are the terrorists by the body count. For example, of all the children killed, 173 children killed for political purposes. Of the 173, all but 20 were murdered by British forces, not Irish. And so the notion that those who murdered the 153 against those who murdered 20, and the 20 is very, very serious and completely wrong, but it is outrageous that the murderers of the 153 would claim the moral high ground and call the others the terrorists. And that's what's going on. In today's Telegraph newspaper in England, there's a shocking root and branch condemnation of Jeremy Corbyn and MP John McDonnell, or John O'Donnell. and who have been very helpful, very on the side of justice and democracy, destroying them because of their supposed connection with Irish terrorism. There's no, that entire lengthy article assumes that everyone knows that the Irish are the terrorists. And so they are spending their time condemning these two politicians, Labour politicians, for association with these supposed terrorists. But the homicide records could not be clearer. You can't fake death. You cannot fake murders. And of all the murders, again, of the 173 children murdered, people under 17, all but 20 were murdered by British forces. And then when it comes to the rest of the 3,000 some hundred who were murdered, it's about half of those were murdered by the Irish side and the British side, except, and this is a crucial difference, the Irish side, the IRA, were killing armed enemies, while the British were driving through Catholic neighborhoods and shooting, murdering at random. There's a world of difference between terrorist murders and honorable warfare. And that's what we are. And so the people who conducted those drive-through shootings of some 1,300-1,500 people, they're now calling the Irish the terrorists. And so far in England, and I fear that to a certain extent in this case, but wherever the Irish government goes, that's the lesson. That is the line that's being presented. And so most countries are not saddled with a government that demonizes their own people and works on behalf of the propaganda of an enemy nation, of an opposing nation. And that's what we've got. When it came to the McBride principles for fair employment in Northern Ireland, the Irish government spoke in our state capital, Springfield, Illinois, spoke side by side with the British Consul General in opposition to enactment. We defeated them. They lost. We won, and fairness won. And we defeated them. But who would ever expect that an Irish Consul General would speak against the enactment of a law that would call upon U.S. companies operating in Northern Ireland to not participate in the British policy of denial of jobs to Catholics in order to drive them off the voter registration rolls and out of the country? That became important once the occupied Irish were first allowed to vote after a six-year bloodily suppressed campaign starting in 1968. In the end of 1973, they were allowed to vote. And the British responded by calling upon all employers to stop hiring Catholics, that is to say Irish, with the purpose, the point of it, was to see that they had the vote to try to drive them, starve them out of the country and therefore off the voter registration rolls. That's why Irish America went to work and got the McBride principles for fair employment in Northern Ireland enacted in all the states first, and then later we made it happen in Washington, so it's a federal law. And by the way, the employers there were very happy to maintain American standards of hiring practices in Ireland. But they couldn't have refused when the officials would go to those branch managers, asking them to not hire. The managers could say, well, we would like to accommodate you people, but there's a law back in the States that prohibits us from doing that. So that gets them, that got them off the hook. So that's what the Irish government has done. And it's Irish America that is doing so much more, to the extent anything's been done, for justice and democracy in Ireland. But the Irish government has got to be replaced by one that has some respect for its own people, its own culture.
The sovereign government, Chris, of the 32 county election of 1918, that's the mandate we were given. And that government, that cannot be dissolved, that government. And it's the only legal, valid and bona fide government. That's the government we want to sit at the table in the European Parliament as the legitimate government of the Sovereign Republic of Éire. And we want our Dáil Éireann courts back again. We do not want you know, the Free State constitution, the English common law, as Mary McAleese said to the Crown Ring, and De Valera's 37 constitution. There's no republic even mentioned in it. And you have the European constitution, and you have the English constitution. And you know, we want that back because we want that. That was done by the will of all the people for the sovereign constitution, by the will of all the people in the 1918-30. That's what the Dáil-Éireann courts were set up for, the four courts. And it is that's where the land of Ireland belongs to the citizens of Ireland. And I can read it for anybody if they want to. And the point is that that was the sovereign constitution, that all those landlords' estates were divided up, and the farmers, there were lots of them, there, you know, the 35 acres of land, commission land, that they got and made all those little holdings of land, and everybody working, and that was the constitution that was used for that. And if you think of it, but to finish with the you know, we say we got as far as 1914, you know, I said that my granduncle was sent to Calcutta in India, and India's independence came out of Vaughan's Hotel, the Liverpool salt tax. You know, Mahatma Gandhi was in South Africa at the time, and Geary, the fourth president of India, he was here in Dublin studying law. And he was a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the Fenian Republican Brotherhood, and Sinn Féin. They wouldn't give him his, he saw all that. But Britain couldn't unite, Britain wouldn't give him that, and his law degree. When England, anyway, when they imposed the British, when they imposed the Liverpool salt tax in India, and that's what united the Indian people. And all that came out of Vaughan's Hotel. And because here we had the GEA, as I said, every little town and village in Ireland had a GEA club, and that was the strength of the people. And they all played together on that to get our independence. And you must go back. And India is very important that President Geary, the fourth president of India, and they still come, you know, to the 21st of January when we turned the sovereign seal in the Mansion House, you know, it's 97 years now, and India's that's a sovereign constitution, is India's constitution, and our tricolour flag, they have it the other way around. That's how important it was to India. They couldn't unite the people, but when the Liverpool salt tax was imposed by the British government, that's how Mahatma Gandhi did it, and Geary and all those, you know, that's how. But people don't know that today. That's airbrushed out, and everything is airbrushed out, and the. You know, if you go back then, we'll go back to 1916 because this is the 100th anniversary of the Rising. The Rising was very important. But the plans, the plan was that the evacuation of the GPO, and that tricolour flag was never, it was taken down by Dermot Lynch. It was never captured and brought up under those tunnels. Now, there's different stories. Some say there's a lady wore it inside her clothes and all that, and Dermot Lynch, who's, you know, Dermot Lynch, are friends of Irish freedom in America. But what was so important is that the Crown Force, the escape plan from the GPO was up Moore Street and down those tunnels. And the Crown Forces cut them off there and they couldn't get down those tunnels. If they got down those tunnels, there are many, you know, exits from those tunnels. And those tunnels were put in there when those Georgian houses were built. And, you know, the old gentry used to be using those going up to Monto, which is the red light district and that. But from Phil Shanahan's pub in Foley Street, those tunnels are all connected up. And that's how the chocolate, the printing press, and all those, that's how they were going up and down too. That's how Sam McGuire was taking all those things up and down to Vaughan's Hotel. And that's why it was so important. But, you know, that's all seemed to be airbrushed out of our history. You can't understand 1916 if you don't understand that. And, you know, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, they abhor war. They abhor violence, corruption, maladministration, propaganda, lies and deception. Sovereign citizens don't live like that. We don't want to have anything to do with that. I mean, look at the great people we had. And we saw Sir Roger Casement. You know, look what he did for the rubber trade in South America and in Africa, the Congo. And he wrote about that. And he was executed for that. He was one of our great members. You know, take Bulwer Hobson, another great man. And all those people, they were all intellectual people, the Presbyterian people were behind the War of Independence here. And they wanted, and it goes back, Chris, to what you were talking about in your book, The Holocaust.
You know, I'll take a few minutes. I'll take a few minutes and go into that book. The title of my book is Ireland 1845-1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It, quote, perfect, unquote. John Pilger made a statement at the Duloc to Lewisburg so-called famine walk back in 1997 when an Irish professor asked if we would help to promote her book in the States about the so-called famine. And I said, well, it does mention the number of British regiments that removed the food, doesn't it? She said, no. Well, I said, why would you bother adding to a pile of cover-up books? And someone shouted out, John, when are you going to write the book that we're all waiting for about the starvation of Ireland? And this stranger answered, the Anglo-American publishing establishment will still kill any book that tells the truth about the starvation of Ireland. I asked who he was, and it turned out his name is John Pilger, and I happen to have a few books written by him in my library. So here's what my book does. It demolishes every other book ever written on the starvation of Ireland, in that here's what it does. It provides documented, unassailable facts, proof that vast amounts of non-potato edibles were produced by the Irish. Vast amounts of Irish edibles were exported while the people starved.
Excuse me, Chris.
Ireland's edibles were removed at gunpoint by 67 named British regiments. Each Irish district and the regiment that starved it and when it was starved are shown in a map on my book and also in the exhibits. The British police and landlords' militias led the food removal attempts. And when they failed, only then was the army called in. But over half the British army were in Ireland at the time, removing Ireland's food. The locations of hundreds of thousands of resultant, mass graves that dot Ireland are shown on the map. The landlords' names and data, their personal data, and how the UK bought them out, and how they were repatriated to England in between 1900 and 1910 is all included in the book. And then on Tar Moor, Irish for Irish Holocaust, was part of a centuries-long British policy in Ireland. All of that is shown, proven, documented within the book. And so I'm calling for people to begin to install truthful, respectful monuments over Ireland's mass graves of on Tar Moor.
Sorry, Chris.
And so that's the purpose of the book eventually is to put markers, show some respect for those many hundreds of known mass graves, and we're hoping that we'll find some of or most of the remaining, probably 2,000 or 3,000.
Can I interrupt you
for
a
very sad story? But it's the main covered up genocide of the world today. Some 5 million people were murdered. And they were dumped in mass graves. Many died coming across. The death rate between the crossing to the States and to Canada, and within the first month of arrival here, about 40% of the people died. It's really shocking what happened. But what was happening again is that the Irish were growing huge amounts of non-potato foods. One crop, the potato crop, failed. And all the other crops were removed at gunpoint, and it took more than half of the British army of their Empire army at the time to achieve that genocide. And that's the fact that we must get out, and we must do it in order to stop genocide as governmental policy. It is shocking what is going on, and I must say the United States used to hold in contempt the whole British system of colonialism. Roosevelt essentially wiped them out of the Caribbean in his battleships for bases contract with Churchill. But the current government has now resurrected all these colonial ideas, and we are doing today, the United States is doing today, what the British would have done had they the weapons at that time. But all of the instincts are there for domination, for robbery, for crime. It's all there. We are engaged in multiple supreme crimes. And I use the phrase supreme crime as it was devised at the Nuremberg Tribunal, that all of the crimes committed within a war is to be blamed upon the people who started the war in the first place. And we went into Iraq and other places with absolutely no purpose except criminal purposes. And so we're hoping that in getting the word out through my book about the starvation of Ireland, that genocide will wake up many people, that genocide is the worst possible thing that can happen, and we must not continue to pay for it with our taxes. We must not continue paying for genocide, for the funding of genocide with our taxes, and that is what we are doing today.
And Chris, isn't that what Sir Roger Casement at the time, he saw the same, what you were talking about, over the rubber in the Congo, and those all those people being wiped out and their hands cut off, and in South America, and wasn't he the first person to start, you know, human rights for people?
He was, and sorry to say that while he did that, he did a wonderful job, we don't cut hands off anymore. What we do, we shred people. We vaporize them. We drop layers of concrete floors of decks of apartment buildings down upon them. That's what we're doing. We don't just cut off hands. It's shocking what we are doing with our drones and our bombs. And we claim to be delivering human rights. We're delivering human rights by shredding the people into little pieces.
And Chris, wasn't the Holocaust what caused the famine here? The landlord system of all those estates that they took over, it was all to feed the Crown forces. And as you say, they fed those slave owners, fed their slaves on that food as well that came out of here. And the people, it's what happened in the Congo and in South America. You know, they were working the people so hard to collect more and more rubber that the people couldn't grow the food for themselves. And that's, they wiped out village after village after village. And that is the parallel that, you know, he's one of our great esteemed members, Roger Casement. And you know, he saw that, and that was the parallel. He saw that, and yes, with the famine, which is the starvation of our people.
We're trying to end the use of the word famine regarding Ireland. If anyone doesn't understand that, if they think that there was a gassing of Zyklon B of the prisoners of the Nazis in Auschwitz, if they think that they were gassed, they should start using the time of the air pollution and see how far they get with that. That's the equivalent of referring to the genocide in Ireland as famine.
Excuse me, Chris. I've got a question for you. You mentioned John Pilger earlier. Are you referring to the Australian journalist and documentary filmmaker?
Yes.
Okay.
And we have tremendous. He was what we were doing there is that in 1846 or 7, the word was put out in Lewisburg, County Mayo, that the local English landlord who owned 150,000 acres. Claimed to be owned it. He had the right to sell everything that was produced in that many, many square mile area of Western Mayo. It was said that he had vouchers to give to the people where they could collect grain from a government grain storage house. And so they went across the mountains, 11 mile unpaved across the mountains to his hunting lodge. And there he and his friends were having lunch, and they were told that they weren't going to be given anything. And so the people, already starving, started to head back the 11 miles to Lewisburg from Duloch Lodge. And they almost all died. Hundreds died along the way. And it said that their bodies were as thick as sheaves of grain along the way on the way back. So that's what happened there. So people then, to this day, they meet on a Sunday in July. And at Duloch, where the hunting lodge still stands today, and they walked the 11 miles to Lewisburg, sort of in communion with the people who had once tried to do that and almost all died. And John Pilger was there with us the day one time when my wife and I were at it. Go ahead, Mike.
But isn't it awful, Chris? We're betrayed on every occasion, and you know, and you talk there about. At one stage, Harold Wilson wanted to hand back the six counties to the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. And it was the provisional government here that wouldn't allow it.
May I suggest to you that that might have been merely a kabuki show, that it was arranged that the British government would pretend to give it back in order to reduce tensions between the Irish and the British, because of the Irish could stand, the Irish government thought they could stand the pressure.
Well, I agree, but anyway, we were talking there about what happened on the 6th of December 1921, and it's very interesting here. I'm looking at the Ireland's Forgotten Son, the Liam McCarthy story, and I'd just like to say something here. In that book, you have, and I'll read it out here now, you have one of those bonds, and the bond is Government of the Irish Republic, and it's signed by Micheál O'Connell, Michael Collins, Minister for Finance. This is 1919. But on the 6th of December 1921, he was only Provisional Minister for Finance under the Crown. He had to step down.
Yes.
From the Sovereign Republic of Ireland's Dáil. That's why I say to you, Sinn Féin never took their seats in the Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas.
That's a very important document you have there.
It is, and I'll tell you, that tells you the truth about what happened. And that Royal Oireachtas is what's sitting in Europe today, and lying and propaganda lies and deception, and pretending that they're the sovereign government. And you can take Enda Kenny thanked everybody for that he was Taoiseach of Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann never sat in Leinster House. And these things have to come out, and the truth has to come out in Europe, as all these lies and deception. And a provisional government, that's why, as I said in that letter to David Cameron, that General de Gaulle, because I know, because I was there around at the time when all this was happening, he wouldn't allow Britain into the European common market, because Britain only has a sovereign government. They don't have that sovereign government that's needed in Europe. You have to have a sovereign government to sit at the table in Europe. And General de Gaulle, he called on Britain, because they only have, Britain is, the crown is royalty. They have a royal government, they have a royal courts of arms, and they have a royal force, crown force.
Yes, it is, after all, the kingdom of Great Britain.
Yes, and that's 1155, when Pope Adrian IV, the only English pope, gave it to Henry II to build his empire. And the word harp, which is up in the coat of arms of the Crown of England, is a taboo subject in both Britain and Ireland. Nobody, no journalist or any of these, and I quoted that book for you on Aubrey Burrell, and it's the key to all those stone circles, Stonehenge and all that. And nobody is allowed to mention, because the next question you might ask is, where is the Crown of England getting their sovereignty from? And sovereignty, as you know, comes from God. And the harp is the covenant between God and man with all the information and knowledge for his planet Earth and our civilization. And the Book of Psalms is the Psalter.
I think you'll start losing some people at this stage, Billy.
Well, maybe. No. I know you don't like it, Chris. But I have said this to people, and they say, you have to continue on with this. We are going to be asked, where is your sovereignty coming from? And you go to Lochgar, to the stone circle, which is over 5,000. It's Old Grange. It's older than Old Grange, than New Grange. That's where New Grange came out. And that stone there is where the Brian Brew harp sat on. And that's aligned across the lake to Carrigal. And there's two stone circles up there. And those stone circles, they're all aligned to the Galtees, which are the Clarshigs, the harp. They're the harps, the Clarshigs. That's what the Galtees are known as. And the strings of the harp are the strings. And you can quote, I'm quoting Aubrey Burrell, B-U-R-A-U-B-R-E.
But sovereignty.
He has done all those things. That is alignment to the sovereignty. All the other stone circles are aligned to something else.
But sovereignty. Sovereignty does not come from stone circles. It's a convention.
We know that, Chris. We know that it comes from God. And we know that. But nobody understands God. And how do you build a structure? How do you build a home? How do you have a calendar? All those are in. And Tutankhamun, he built the pyramids of Egypt with the harp. The Star of David, they're all harp signs. And that's where it all comes out of. And that's how man, that's what our civilization comes from. And it's time people looked into those. We can go back and prove that for over 5,000 years. I'd like to see any other country proving it the same. That is the harp, and that's, the harp is the symbol of our country. And that's what the harp means, and that's where it comes from. And I
but
think
we know, but we know justice. We know justice when we see it. And I think if we just focus on justice itself and what we call government of, by, and for the people, we will get very close to what we think God wanted for us.
Well, that's true. No one understands God. But look, I can tell you one thing: the genesis of the Bible. That comes. That's the harp. The harp could. The Bible could not have been written without that knowledge and technology. It's all about technology. And the Book of Psalms is the Psalter. It has the two images, from wrong to right, evil to good. And that's all Celtic Christianity. There's Genesis is in the Book of Psalms. And that's, you couldn't write the Book of Psalms. You couldn't write the Bible without the harp. And you couldn't build the pyramids of Egypt. You couldn't build any structure, because it's all about measurements. It's all about mathematics, and it's all about technology.
Excuse
and
me,
it's
Chris,
all there, the wheel and everything else is on it. And that man, the famous man in Britain, Aubrey Burrell, he's been to all those places. He doesn't mention the harp in England because he's not allowed to mention the harp.
I'd like to mention here that Mary and I are going out shortly here in Chicago to a gathering of people who are preparing to present a part. We're playing part in an international manifestation demanding justice for the Craigavon Two. Craigavon is a town in Northern Ireland. There are two young men there, John Paul Wooten and Brendan McConville, who have been imprisoned for the last 6 years, having been framed for a murder. And they were convicted on essentially zero evidence. It's about the most obscene miscarriage I've ever seen, or anyone that's ever who has examined it. So we're getting together tonight, and we're asking people everywhere. John Paul, it's called the Craigavon Two. Craigavon again is a town in Northern Ireland, and Mary and I visited these two young men. One has been locked up since he was 17. 6 years, 23 years of age now. It is outrageous, but that is merely to show the people of Ireland what the British can do. In other words, if you're powerful enough, you don't have to abide by any law. You can make up the law as you go. You don't permit, if you have enough power, you don't permit jury trials. You just put one judge, a politically connected person, in charge, and whatever he says, and he's told essentially what to say, that's the so-called law, and that shows who's boss. That's the purpose of the law, to show who's boss. And so there's work to be done. We have so much to do. We have so much to do regarding getting the United States back off its criminal path overseas and back on to working of, by, and for the American people. And, of course, the same thing for Ireland. The foisting of those that 78 billion euro onto the taxpayers of Ireland and making whole the banksters' bad investments is truly, truly shocking. How can the Irish government claim to be the government of Ireland when it performed that crime of foisting again the bad lending decisions of international banksters who came to Ireland and making them whole and making the taxpayers of Ireland, who had nothing whatever to do with their decisions.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Chris.
Yes.
I don't want to keep you or Billy any longer than what you need to be on here, but there is a couple of questions for you, Chris, in the chat. Dell would like to know how many regiments were in Ireland during the famine, and how many men is that?
Well, first of all, please stop calling it famine. We were all raised with it. In fact, it took me a year to
genocide.
Get that off the top of my tongue, because my tongue tip, because we're all raised with it. We all immediately say it, but there was no famine.
It was a
any
genocide,
more than there
yes.
was a, than, any more than there was a, an air pollution in Auschwitz.
Right.
It was not natural. But more than half the British Empire Army were in Ireland in those years. They weren't there, all of them, for the entire 5.5 years, but 67 of Britain's 130 regiments were in Ireland in those years. And that was in addition to the landlords' militias. There were 37,000 landlord militia troops, and there were 12,900 British constables. So, and then, of course, there were Marines, British Marines, and British Coast Guard all the way around the coast. So it was a massively organized genocide perpetrated by the British government. Again, 67 out of 130 of their regiments, slightly more than half of their entire army, perpetrated that genocide. Is there another question?
Yes, there is. Are you aware of the millions that were collected in taxes from Ireland and only one-third returned or slash spent from the consolidated tax funds?
Is that in recent times?
I'm not positive.
All I know for sure is that the current criminal, actually treasonous government of Ireland, has made itself a tax haven where they allow corporations into Ireland to pay essentially zero taxes. And Apple, for example, have been ordered by the European Court for Justice to pay Ireland €14.5 billion. And the Irish government is begging not to have to accept it from Apple.
It's a betrayal again, Chris, a betrayal again.
Yeah, you have to laugh. But in any event, this matter of taxes is another obscenity. Obviously, each corporation or entity should pay the taxes in the national jurisdiction where they make the profit. And they should pay the taxes according to the amount of profit in each political jurisdiction. This notion of being able to define some place who won't make them pay taxes and then declare that their international earnings are all earned by that mailbox in Dublin is really crazy. The same thing, of course, is going on in the Cayman Islands. There are some buildings there. I've seen in Nassau years ago a little two-story building with 50 or 60 bronze plaques all along both sides of the front door and along the walls of the building, each one representing a corporation that is supposedly headquartered in that little two-story building. The whole thing done, of course, to avoid taxes.
It's unbelievable,
wow.
The whole thing.
Yeah, it is. I've heard reports. I'm not really sure how it can be substantiated, but I believe it's well over $6 out of $10 over here in America from taxes goes into offshore banks. I think Dell also said something about throughout the 1800s, two-thirds of the taxes were kept by the crown.
Wow. No, Dell is not that old. Michael Dell is still alive.
No, Delamitri in the chat.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He happened to mention this.
Yes.
But yeah. Isn't that,
one thing we all must do, and I'm not at all casting any aspersions or any questioning what you just said, but it is absolutely a requirement that all of us who are marginalized and attempting to bring justice from the outside, that our facts be demonstrable, that we be able to support every single thing we say, because we do know that the criminals who operate with falsehood at all times will destroy us if we make one mistake.
But isn't that what the crown you're talking about? But America's, their wealth comes from, like Britain did in those days, from all overseas territories. And that's what they do. They go into these countries and they plunder these countries for themselves. And the Crown of England, I mean, they have a Crown Force, and the job of the Crown Force is just to do what the Crown tells them. And that's why we have a democracy, and we're trying to have a reasonable and a defense force. We don't have an army. And that's the difference. The Crown Forces can do what they like. And sure, isn't it a fact that Britain still regards America as their subjects? And isn't America doing exactly what Britain did, as you said?
Only recently. The United States only started doing that. The Second World War, the United States was still opposed to colonialism. I must say we had our own colony in Puerto Rico and other places at the time. But we, Roosevelt, helped to destroy the British colonial system, partly by his battleships for bases contract with Churchill. And essentially, Britain lost all of its Caribbean islands, at least all the profit out of them, as a consequence of that contract, that agreement. But it's shocking that, for example, today now, in the Middle East, there are two branches of ISIS who are fighting each other, and the Kurds are in the middle of it, and the Turks are in it, and all of them are using weapons provided by the United States government. all of them. So we are munitioning and arming all sides, and that's what has got to stop.
That's where the money comes from, isn't that? What it's
yes.
all about, money.
And only a few people. Only a few people are getting that money, you know.
But you were talking too, Chris, about on the 21st of January every year, we claim all our territory as we did on the 21st of January 1919, and that includes all the six counties of Ireland. And I mean, look, there was never a treaty signed here; it was an illegal document. How
yes.
can King George V, and he, where was he getting his sovereignty from anyway? And the point is, if he declared Dáil Éireann to be an illegal assembly, who did he do a treaty with? You know, the whole thing, he did it, and on the threat of immediate and terrible war.
Yes.
And the people, so what's the difference between the people who voted here in the 32-county election of 1918 for Vaughan Sertel and the people who voted in Britain on the 23rd of June? And David Cameron said, oh, it's a sovereign vote by the sovereign people of Britain. Oh, it has to be respected. It wasn't respected here on the 21st
yes.
of January
1900. Yes.
Where there seems to be a total different. They can do whatever they like, and that isn't that what Crown Forces did over here? You had the black and tans and the auxiliaries, and I mean they've no regard for people.
In our time, British vote. The British now in the Telegraph newspaper in England today, they make the Irish seem to be the terrorists. But the Dublin Monaghan bombing, murder of 34, wounding of 300 British forces. The Bloody Sunday murder of shooting of 30, mostly in the back, 14 murdered by British Army. Lochan Island by British supported terrorists. McGurk's Pub, shooting and bombing of a pub, 14 people. The Oma bombing, 29 murdered. We don't know how many maimed in a bomb that was blamed upon the IRA, but was controlled by MI5 and FBI agents from Chicago. That all of these atrocities were initially reported as being IRA atrocities, but within a few days, essentially all of them were known. They knew who the perpetrators were, but none of those atrocities that I've just mentioned have been prosecuted. So that tells you who won the Anglo-Irish conflict of 1968 to 1995. It was won not by force of arms, but by treachery on the part of Gerry Adams and a few people around him. And that's this very sad feature of the whole thing. And I'm just hoping that his treachery is not rewarded. Gerry Adams will get nowhere in the six counties anymore where he's from, because people now know what he did. But while the people in the north have finally wakened up to his treachery, the people in the republic seem to be embracing it.
But Chris, there's one thing I would like to point out too, which people don't realize. You know, as you know, my family bought Vaughan Sertel, which was headquarters of of the Irish and Fenian Republic, coming among the Fenian, Nina Hearn, all those organized, Ogden Hearn, and all those. And that's what we set it up for. But on the 6th of December 1921, when the split, when Michael Collins stepped down, De Valera had already stepped down from the IRB. So Fianna Fáil is not a Republican party. There's no mention in the 37 Constitution. Fine Gael isn't a Republican party, and you know the claim. And you have to be a republic to sit in the sovereign republic of Ireland's Dáil Éireann government. But on the 6th of December 1921, Collins stepped down from the Irish Republic to sign that illegal agreement. But what most people don't know, that, you know, it split the Irish Republican Brotherhood in two, and Ogden Hearn, that they were given the mandate of the second Dáil Éireann to protect the sovereignty and what they had achieved on the 32 counties. And the only place that the IRA could say the war is over was in Vaughan Sertel. And the Peace, Reconciliation and Prosperity process, which was founded down in my home, which was Willibank, which is now part of the university, by the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood, and my father went to Rome to the Pope Pius XII too, and you know, the Presbyterian people and lots of people took their seats in the House of Lords for it and everything else. And then you come along the Fine Gael and it was Labour at the time, came along, and the university. And those people used to come down. John Taylor, I remember speaking to John Taylor down at the university, and that was Brendan O'Regan. He was brilliant. And that's what Chuck Feeney came over here to put his money into. He wanted to purchase Vaughan's Hotel and have his office in it and restore it. And he wanted to build onto Willowbank, you know, a theatre for all about peace, reconciliation and prosperity process. I said that was founded down there in 1950 by the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood and Cumann na mBan na Fine. And
by the way, regarding the Good Friday Agreement and the reduction of violence in the North, the claim that the reduction of violence is due to the Good Friday Agreement is completely false. The hang on, I'm not finished yet. Violence peaked in 1972 when homicides reached 472 that year. It had dropped down to 69 by 1984 and was continuing to drop. It would be near zero today, but in 1984 was still 14 years before the Good Friday Agreement of 1998. So the notion that the Good Friday Agreement ended the violence is an outrageous falsehood, and I can't imagine why people let it go unchallenged.
But what I'm telling you about, I'm giving you the facts, what happened over the peace, right, that was founded by the Irish down at, which is now the university, and was going along very nicely. And the next thing, we heard that, and that's what Chuck Feeney was putting his money into and supporting it. And the next thing we heard, it was scrapped in favor of the Good Friday Agreement, which isn't a Good Friday.
That was the treason. Because that had only one enforceable half a page in the entire document of 67 pages full of mutual contradictions, aspirational posturing, and pure baffle-gab. And that page had mandated the signing over, the surrendering of the disputed six counties to the British government. And that's what happened.
But Chris, I mean, I know, because I was very friendly with Peter Barry, who only died last week. My father used to go down to, you know, John Francis McGuire, the Cork Examiner and that, and they wanted the link. And he was very friendly with Peter Barry's father, who founded the tea business down there, Barry's Tea, and all those politicians. And we used to have lunch every year with the Crosbys and that, because they got the paper for 10 shillings a week for as a pension for his widow. That's how they hold the Cork Examiner. They don't have it now, but from what I know. But anyway, as a child, you know, was very friendly with Peter Barry's father and all those politicians, and they were always very nice to me. And I used to go to Bail na Blaw because Michael Collins was a member of the Irish Republican Brotherhood and the Fenian Republican Brotherhood, Sinn Féin, Oda Mehran, and the IRA.
Let's hope now that we make some progress and that the people wake up. It does seem that the people of Ireland now see what's really going on. And I think it's a very salutary change in Ireland, that the people are finally waking up to see what's going on, and they've got to look north and see
betrayed, what they're being betrayed. They don't see what's going on. They just see that they're being betrayed. And what I'm telling you about that about Peter Barry, I mean, I was very friendly with him, and I went down to ask him to purchase Vaughan's Hotel for the peace reckoning. He knew all that about Vaughan's Hotel, and he wouldn't. He refused to. He was the one. Hugh Coveney was his sidekick in Cork. He was a Fine Gael as well, and he was in the OPW. He was the one who got it. But it was Peter Barry that I asked him to purchase Vaughan's Hotel for the peace reckoning, where the IRA would speak authoritatively and where the peace process would hold enough. There is no peace process now in Ireland since the 23rd of June. That Good Friday Agreement has gone out the door, and I'm trying to get them to go back They gutted Willowbank and they gutted Vaughan's Hotel, the provisional government of Fine Gael. And
tell me, what would that hotel sell for today? I know it's just a vacant building now. What would it sell for?
Well, I think the one next door made 400,000.
I see.
And the government, they wouldn't even clean it for where the state was founded, the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. They're all shouting about sovereignty, and the Sovereign Dáil Éireann government came out of it. And they wouldn't, where the Queen came and laid the wreath in the garden of remnants. That's why it's there under those tunnels. But the point is that you think that I asked Enda Kenny and I asked Simon Coveney to you know, that Vaughan's Hotel would be cleaned up and painted. And fair dues to the Ogden, the Heron, the Defence Forces, they offered to do it, I think. But he wouldn't allow it. Simon Coveney wouldn't allow it. And either would Endicemi. You know, that's what you're up against here. Where do they think they're getting their sovereignty? They're out telling lies, propaganda lies and deception in Europe, pretending they're a sovereign government, as is Michael D. Higgins. He was involved in the gutting of Vaughan's Hotel, and he was involved in the gutting of Willibank. Labour knew it, but I don't think Dick Spring was told the truth about it. Either was Jim Kemmy told the truth about it.
But the very betrayal you're talking about, it must wake up the people. In fact, I've talked to many, and they have wakened up. They now know. Many people always knew, but those who didn't know are now learning. We're about to head out the door now to this meeting, which is going to be preparation for the playing Chicago's part in this Justice for the Craig Avon 2 on the 22nd of September. So we're going to head out now. I'll say goodbye to both of you, and thank you so much, Billy, for doing your great job.
It's very educational to listen to you, and you're very concise, and you put it into context, which nobody does over here. We have no papers, or we have nobody would speak about that. And as you know,
thank you, Stephen.
Yes, brilliant, Chris. Thank you for coming on. It's almost 11 p.m. over there for Billy, so I'll let him go.
Yes, it is. Okay, bye to you both now.
Goodbye, Chris.
Bye, Chris.
Thank you for coming on, Billy. Chris is gone now, so.
Well, I just finished by saying that on the 25th of September, we're having, you're very close to the 1918-32 county election. That'll be 100th anniversary just around the corner, and the sovereign Dáil-Éireann government. There's only one legal valid and so on. That's by the will of the people in the 1918-32. It sat in the Mansion House in the Round Room and was ratified. And that's what we want. And that's what we want. All we want in Europe is our sovereign Dáil-Éireann government by the will of all the people. It can't be dissolved. It's still there. We go every year. We claim all our territory. We claim our sovereignty for the sovereign Dáil-Éireann government, and all people are sovereign. I've never seen any politician at that. You know, I saw maybe one in all that time.
Yes.
Maybe two. In all that time, and I'm 53 years.
Yeah,
you know.
I wanted to go back and make a comment on what you said earlier. All of the kings and the queens and the monarchs all over the world, all over history's time, they've all claimed their sovereignty through God. Haven't they?
I know, if you claim your sovereignty to God, the harp is the covenant between God and man. Nobody understands what God is. And it's like the Bible. The Bible was written by mankind, but the technology to write the Bible comes from the harp, and that's what's important. And that's, you see King David, you see the Star of David. They're all harp signs. You see Tutankhamun, his sign, his seal is the harp sign, which is the two fingers and the circle. And you put your left hand, which is the sunship and the moonship, together. And that forms the great triangle. And your first finger then is the circle for measuring the circumference, the sun, the moon, and the planet Earth. It's all to do with those alignments that we're talking about. And the sun box, the sound box, it's all on that. It's all to do with the first four strings are earth, air, fire, and water. Man's intellect and reason and his five senses. And it's written in Om, which is the first structured language of mankind. The second is hieroglyphics, and that's how man learned to write. On the curved side of the harp is how man invented the wheel. And, you know, the strings become the spokes. The eye becomes the hub of the wheel. The man can travel the world. If the sun ship is the blueprint for the curve, how you build your ship, the strings become the lats. And the curved side again becomes the for the Atlantic Ocean, the keel of the ship for the Atlantic Ocean. That's where it comes from. Every child in the world is born sovereign, and every child has a right to the first four strings, which are earth, air, fire, and water.
Yes.
And that's a God-given right. And you use your five senses, and people are not using their five senses today.
Yes.
You have these corporations coming in, and you have these provisional sort of awful corrupt governments, and they're just controlling people. It's like religions controlling people. You know, that's not how sovereign citizens live. And you know, I mean, those people in the Irish Republic, they were all great intellectual people, you know, Bulwer Hobson and all of those, and William Butler Yeats, you know, the coinage himself, and Ernest Blythe, and, you know, put the sovereign seal on the money and that. But we can trace that for over 5,000 years, and I would like to see other countries claiming where they're getting their sovereignty from. You know, we're all hearing these things, but you go out then, and there's nothing but horrible, you know, war and destroying. And this doesn't have to live like that. You know, it's all about this weapons and selling to. There's great positive technology, but technology must never be carted to war. And that's why the Queen of England has never claimed. If the Queen of England was the sovereign, then the Queen of England decides whether Britain leaves the European Union or not, because the people in Britain are subjects to the Crown of England.
Yes,
and
they are.
They're the facts. And the people here are sovereign citizens and have a right to the force, four strings, earth, air, fire and water, the man's intellect, reason and his five senses. And they have a right to education, hospital care, and all the assets of the state, but that doesn't happen. It seems to be these corporations coming in, they have no license. They pay some tax to the provisional government, who keep their give themselves huge salaries and give themselves huge pensions and expenses. And the same with the civil servants, but they couldn't care less about people.
Well, the
people here are... Sorry, Stephen.
The problem there is, Billy, the people in Parliament, they profit from the corporations that help make these laws and that. And that's where the problem in lies.
Yes, but these people go out to Europe and claim that the latest is that they're members of Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann has never sat. Enda Kenny should be made to prove that he is the Taoiseach of Dáil Éireann. And Michael Noonan should be made to prove that he is... I've just read out there about Michael Collins, was minister.
Yes.
For finance in 1919. And in the 6th of December 1921, he was only provisional minister. It's only the Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas under King George V that sits in Leinster House. And they use our tricolour flag illegally and fraudulently. They use and are using our sovereign seal of the Sovereign Republic of Éire on those documents now in Europe and pretending that they are the sovereign government when they don't... They've never been on the 21st of January to the Mansion House. They don't... They can't... If you get a tax, something from the revenue commissioners here, they use the sovereign seal, but there's no error underneath it. So who are you paying your tax to? You know, people have to stand up. It's like the courts. They're the Dáil Éireann courts, as I said, for the sovereign constitution. And what's been used in them? The De Valera's 37 constitution, just if they have republic in it. The Free State constitution. English common law has been used. European constitution. You know, it is scandalous to see what's going on. And it's awful to see, while you never take the harp to war. That's what happened to the Hebrew people. You know, the Ark of the Covenant, they came over here to Tara and they dug it up looking for it. But we know there weren't angels on the Ark of the Covenant. There were harps. And that's what Cromwell, when he camped his troops in Loch Gur, they destroyed all the harp signs and all the om on that. And Cromwell, you know the Brian Drew harp, the eye at the top where you tread the eye, with Copernicus and Galileo, and to make the 12 months calendar. You know, the Roman Catholic Church had to have a day for the ascension into or Easter Sunday and the ascension into heaven. And you can only do that with the calendar. There was as I said, Tutankhamun, the Egyptian people had a calendar. All mathematics from the harp. And that's how they got there. And if you go to Termini in Rome, you'll see that eye again up in that basilica. And the sun will run along that eye. And when it strikes that and runs along the floor, Easter Sunday is after the first full moon for the whole world. That's the mathematics of it. It's here in Loch Gur. It's here in all those new grange, old grange. It's still there. And that's the winter and summer, the winter. We only had 6 months calendar. And all our civilization, everything comes to that. The sundial, the compass, the wheel. And you can do that. You don't have to. Any child can go out and do all those things with the harp and that. And I think it's about time it came out that what we have. And I keep on asking Americans, where did you get your sovereignty from? And then they say, they never know where they're getting it from. And the Magna Carta then, but the Magna Carta is the Constitution. That has nothing to do with sovereignty. It's man-made. And you get your sovereignty from God. And you get it, we get it from the harp, which is the covenant. And if you throw that out of thing, that's why the world is in such, and it's there written, that every time it's desecrated, 1155, when Pope Adrian IV gave it to Henry II to build his empire, that was the fleur-de-lis and the harp up in that. It was the Hundred Years' War. And until they took it down, Cromwell has it up in his coat of arms. That's how important it was.
Yes.
And you know, he was the first Republican here. And you know what he did here. I mean, we had to be Republicans. That's why we're a republic today. But we're a sovereign republic. The people are sovereign.
Yes.
You know, and we're not told the truth here. And I mean, even today on Radio Éireann, you had Marion Fidoukin show, and they were all talking. I mean, you had the likes of Dermot Forrest, and you had he was the Attorney General at the time. But anyway, why didn't Marion Fidoukin? Why didn't she ask Dermot Forrest, where are we getting this sovereignty? They were talking about sovereignty. And MacDowell, who was in the government here, and he was Attorney General. And they never asked the questions. I mean, why didn't Peter Barry buy Vaughan Sertel for the peace, reconciliation, and prosperity process? You know, he was the most powerful man in Fine Gael. He was the most powerful man in the Royal Dáil. A nod from him, and could we bought, the IRA would have said, where the war is over, and we'd have a bit of peace. But no, they don't do that. And I think that's wrong, and I think they should be made accountable for it. And I think Enda Kenny has to prove now that he is Taoiseach of Dáil Éireann, and Michael D. Higgins has to prove he is president of the Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas. He's not president of Ireland. Dáil Éireann is a 32-county mandate. The Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas is a 26, for here, 6 and 6. And that's what it is, 6 county, and the 26 counties here. That's what the Royal Oireachtas is. And that's what King George V imposed on the 6th of December 1921, a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what sits in Mentor House. And that's what all the lies and deception have been told in Europe and colluded with. And I think it's time all that came out. And I think sovereign citizens, they don't want that. They don't live like that. You know, and you uphold all those the values that are our civilization. I mean, the computer, that harp is the first computer known to mankind.
Yeah.
And it's God's gracious gift to mankind for his civilization.
Yes.
And I think it should be respected. That's all I'd say about it.
I think you're right, Billy. And as far as I'm concerned, nobody can give your sovereignty away either.
No, you cannot do it.
No.
And that's what's important. Every child is born sovereign. And I think everybody in the world wants their children to be sovereign and have a sovereign right. Nobody wants their children enslaved, and it's all about that. And I think if children are educated and initiated into what sovereignty is, they can understand it, because it's all to do with your, I said, the first four strings are earth, air, fire, and water, man's intellect and reason and his five senses. And that's 9 strings, and that's what the Crown of England claimed, that she's Dea Amandrach, she's equal to God. But we have the sovereign Trinity.
Yes.
That's why we have 12, and they're all different ones. But Chris doesn't like me speaking about sovereignty, and he doesn't like me speaking about the harp. But I think, what is that doing up in the coat of arms of the Crown of England? You know, when the Crown of England leaves, we'll say Buckingham Palace, she takes down the standard with the sovereign seal on it, is the harp sign, and the Union Jack is flown. Oh, say she's going to Windsor. The Union Jack is taken down from Windsor when she enters it, and that harp is there. That harp is taboo in Britain. Nobody's allowed to ask what's there, why it's there, how it's there. And I think it's time that people in Britain, you know, were given that information. And those great, I mean, look at the records they have, and look at Stonehenge and all. It's the key to all those stone circles. And it's the key to Stonehenge and all those places. And we have it. Our one is aligned in Loch Gur to the harp. That's why the harp is our national emblem. And we can prove it. And the Galtees are known as the Clarsics, the harps. And that's where it comes from. And, you know, I think people need to be told the truth, because man now, we're in the era of technology, and all technology comes from the harp. Everything you want to build, make, everything comes from that. And we can destroy the world, and we can destroy mankind if we're not told the truth. And I think it's time all that come out. Everybody has a phone and a computer and everything else. It all comes from that. And it's time we lived the truth and we told the truth and we respect planet Earth and we respect, you know, and that's left to us by our ancestors, and that's so important.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Billy, I'm not gonna keep you any longer. I'm not going to throw you off air, but I'm not going to keep you any longer either. I know it's past 11
thank
p.m.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for taking. I do wish Vincent a speedy recovery. Vincent has been great to us over the years. And, you know, he was one of the few people that could grasp the sovereignty at the very beginning.
Yes.
And he really, when nobody else, Vincent was always there for us.
Yes,
and
he
is. I think he's great, and we wish him well.
Yes, we
and
all
I
do.
I wish you well as well. And I thank you very much.
Thank you.
That the Irish Republic can speak. Thanks very much, Steve.
Thank you, Billy.
Good night to all your listeners.
Have a good night. All right, everyone. That was some great stuff there. As I mentioned, I am filling in for Vin, so there's a little less than 50 minutes left. I'm going to play a few things out for the rest of Vin's show. So stay tuned for this one song, and then I'm going to put another special thing on. Be right back in just a few minutes, everyone.